Hey everyone, I just wanted to let you know that this episode is part one of a 10-part series that will be focusing on the intricacies of player development. It's something we wanted to offer you as we put the finishing touches on our Player Development Masterclass. So, each episode will feature a conversation between myself and Gary Kleiben, and we will dissect different topics that can help you help your players, whether you are a coach, a trainer, or a parent. If you're interested, you can get on the priority access list for the Player Development Masterclass by visiting 343masterclass.com. All right, thanks for listening, and I hope that you enjoy this new series of episodes. This is the 343 Podcast. I'm your host, John Pronich. Welcome to the show. To fully develop a player, you cannot rely solely on the structured club environment. There is so much that should be happening outside of that club environment, away from the coach, on the player's own time, that contributes significantly to the development process. In this episode, Gary Kleiben joins me to discuss what he calls the five components of player development. Those are the household parent family influence, the playing on your own influence, the pickup game influence, the structured club training influence, and the personal training influence. Each tap into a piece of the puzzle. Some may be more important than others, and there's definitely overlap between each, but they all play a critical role in the development process, and none can be ignored. We'll get started with this conversation about the five components of player development right after this quick message about our online coaching education program. Thanks so much for tuning in. When it comes to coaching education, being able to discern what will and won't help you can be costly and confusing. The internet is flooded with so much information. There are tons of drills out there for you to watch and tons of things that you can try with your players and teams. But without the proper context and the proper guidance from a legit mentor, you are not going to get the edge that you are looking for or the results that you want. That's what the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program gets right. It's rooted in the real experiences of a master practitioner that has coached soccer right here in America. As a coach, Brian Kleiben has been able to overcome all of the obstacles and produce college-level, professional, and international caliber players. Training just twice per week, field congestion, pay-to-play, you name it. But using the 343 framework and staying consistent with the methodology has led to tremendous success. What the 343 coaching program offers you is a look at Brian's actual work, his real art. It's all captured and delivered to you in its purest form to help you gain an advantage and become a better coach. This exclusive online program features videos of Brian mic'd up during actual training sessions with his real players and teams as they prepare for league games and tournaments. This is the only program in the country that gives you this type of authentic, behind-the-curtain look at player, team, and coach development. It's unlike anything else in this country. It cannot be replicated, and it's not theory or speculation like you'd see in a presentation or something staged like you'd get at a convention. So if you're looking for drills, we've got those, but more importantly, we have the mentorship, the proven results, and the community of ambitious coaches that you won't find anywhere else. To experience all of this, consider joining the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program. You can find all of the details at 343coaching.com. Yeah, so the five components of player development, how did you even come up with this idea that there were five components? What kind of influenced you to either start thinking about this or start writing about this in the way that you did?
It comes directly from personal experience. It's not that I read any sort of soccer book or any sort of non-soccer book that led me down this path. It's strictly a lot of thinking over the years as to what was influencing our players. And then you compartmentalize. You say, hey, the club matters, the household matters, the own personal responsibility of the player matters, and then you know, the other two components, the pickup games and the personal training. So just straight out of influence, John, personal experience. So anyways, I could go off in a general direction here. The natural question that somebody has, especially if you're a parent or a coach or a trainer or somebody who ponders about player development, the natural question is, which one is most important? And the answer that I always come up with is they're all important. I can't give you one specific one like, hey, this is the one that you absolutely must have, and this is the one that's going to enable you to make it. But the way I view it is every player who ends up becoming something in this sport has kind of a different origin story and a kind of a mixture of which ones were more focused than which other ones. I always come back to the African continent, John. I've always thought about the Nigerians, the Cameroonians, the Ivorians, I mean, the Ghanaians, all of them. And they've always had such great players. I mean, they were still missing, in my opinion, a lot of the tactical piece to the game. And maybe that's why they would always fall a bit short at the senior men's national team level. But they always produce such good players. And I always think, okay, what are those environments like? You know, and you don't have to do that much digging to kind of understand that their infrastructure is not very good. The professionalization of the game, the commercialization of the game in that continent is not very good. So what developed these players? And if I look at these five components, again, let's repeat them, the club influence, the household influence, the playing on your own influence, the pickup game influence, and then the personal training, they don't really have, I don't think the club, the structure, club training is that important over there. It's not that responsible, which is quite the inverse of what everybody thinks about here in the United States. I think over there, it's mostly the young players, the community, the kids playing on their own, playing on their own against a wall, or playing on their own in pickup games with family and friends. You could be a 6-year-old playing with 13-year-olds, or a 13-year-old playing with grown men out in, I don't know, a park or in a dirt street or in a concrete street, and not necessarily having nice pug goals or anything of that nature. It's just makeshift goals, which a lot of pickup games all over the world have. You roll over a trash can or two, and that's the goal. And I think that is how these players chiefly developed, is on the street with those components and a lot of the household influence as well. Because, you know, with soccer being so popular over there, you know, I'm sure the parents, the aunts, the uncles, etc., brothers, you know, would mentor the young kid or the young kids in the neighborhood. And the young kids would always mimic the older generation as they were growing up. So I think that is the core of their development. And then, you know, maybe the pick of the litter from those neighborhoods kind of go into maybe a little bit more professionalized club or institution. But again, it's not like you're entering pristine infrastructure there either. So I don't know. I think that's something important to consider, especially here in the United States, where everybody, you know, it seems like everybody says, hey, let me sign up for club soccer. Let me pay my $2,000 or $5,000 a year fee, and hey, club and coach, you know, develop my player into something special. I think that's a little bit misguided.
The personal training influence is interesting to me, and the way I was kind of thinking about it, and I'm speculating here, is that personal training maybe in the African continent or in South America doesn't look the same or isn't the same as we think of personal training here in the United States. Like, personal training literally might come from somebody within the household. So it might be a session with an older brother or a parent or somebody in the neighborhood. And that might be their version of personal training, where here it's very formal. And I guess that kind of sums up the way that things are here. Everything is very formal here. It's very structured. It's very, it's professional. And in the rest of the world, it seems like a lot of these categories are, especially, you know, the household, the playing on your own, the pickup game, and the personal training, it seems like those are more informal and more natural in a sense. So really the only structured environment that exists in some of these countries that you were just kind of talking about, are, you know, which they are lacking, is just the actual club or the tactical training.
Right. And it's quite interesting because we can look, do a 180 and look at the flip side and look what is traditionally some of the best academies or countries with professionalization in the world. You can talk about Spain. You can talk about, yeah, Italy or England or anywhere that has a lot of money and has a lot of infrastructure associated with the game. And there, things could be quite inverted. If we look at Barcelona, you get kids at age 9, 10, 11, 12 already in the institution that is La Masia, and they're being trained 3, 4, 5 times a week throughout the course of the year. And then outside of that training environment, you know, for the most part, as I have it understood, they aren't going and having personal training, and they aren't, I mean, I'm sure they're playing pickup games and doing their own stuff outside, and the household is very well versed in football as well. But you can see how it's quite different than what we just finished describing with the African continent. And yet they also develop world-class players and professional players. So there is no necessarily one path to the top of the heap to developing a player, but every single one of these five components does certainly influence in a player's development. You know, I mentioned that in my opinion, the tactical component is what seems to be missing from these African nations once they reach the professional levels. And in this regard, in this context, the way we framed it, it kind of makes sense because their club infrastructure, the professionalization of the game, isn't quite there at the level of Europe or elsewhere. And where in the club structure, usually it's the tactical piece that is really polished and refined and taught a lot, and hence maybe the shortcoming of the African nations in that regard.
The way that you have this list laid out, you have it laid out 1 to 5, and you've mentioned that there's not one piece of this that is more important than another. So when people read this list and they read it, you know, if they read it in order 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, should they be interpreting that as, you know, this is what, you know, you need first or second or third, or should, you know, could those be placed anywhere in that list?
Yeah, they could be placed anywhere. It's just, here are the five, be aware of them, try to optimize them as best you can. If you have a player here in the United States, which is primarily our audience, of course, then, you know, make sure that you're club situation is taken care of, which for the most part, you know, that's what everybody is focused on anyway. So there's not much to add there except to say the following: don't expect that your club is going to handle all of these components. The club, in my opinion, again, is to teach the player the team game first and foremost, because that is what you're going there for. You are going there to compete as a team on the weekends throughout the course of your youth career. And in training sessions, you have a team there that you have to train. And so, in my opinion, the heavy focus should be on, hey, this is how each individual player fits in the team context. Let's teach the team game. Of course, you can sprinkle in or add in the individual technical skills. Absolutely, of course. And those things should be incorporated within the team activities and exercises. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, don't expect that your team is going to basically personal train your player and have him or her doing all of these, you know, little cone exercises, drilling by the cone for the entire session. I think that's a mistake. I think that is something that the player needs to handle on their own outside of the team training environment, either with a personal trainer. And the personal trainer can be somebody who, you know, maybe does that for a living. Of course, they're going to charge you by the hour. Or what usually is most helpful is if you have a parent, relative, older brother, or something of that nature that is kind of versed in football, and can act as the player's personal trainer themselves. You know, take the player out to the park, take the player out to the front yard, the backyard, the street, wherever, and spend an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, half an hour, whatever it may be, various times a week, and help train and develop the individual skills. That needs to be done outside the club training environment, though.
Well, I think it's important for parents to hear that, because a lot of times when parents are trying to select the right environment, which we've talked about in other episodes, you know, how can a parent possibly decide what is going to be best for their child, especially if they don't have any soccer background? It makes it, you know, astronomically more difficult. But kind of knowing what to look for and what to expect from team training is something that I think parents need help with. And so it's very easy to be impressed by a coach that has all kinds of cones and flags and sticks and all kinds of things that players can be dribbling through or jumping over or all kinds of things. Like, that looks very, very professional. And when you see 10, 15, 20 kids out there all in unison doing all these step overs and dribbling through the cones and whatnot, like, it looks like there's work being done. But as a group of 15 or 20 kids, as a team, that's not what they should be focusing on for those 1 hour, 1.5 hour sessions that they're out there. And I don't know if that's been talked about enough. Like, what should a parent be expecting from the structured club training environment?
Right. No, I agree. And you can look at it, as development curves. Like, if you want to develop and get better, everybody's going to develop and get better the more and more touches they get on the ball. That's obvious, okay? What might not be obvious is maybe an appreciation for who you are up against, who your competition is in this soccer pecking order. And if you have goals as a family for your player to reach a certain level of play, I think it's important to have an appreciation that you're in a global competition or in a regional competition or something much larger than your particular club team that you're at. And so if you're doing all these technical drills in your club environment and not learning the team game, we'll compare that to somebody elsewhere who is learning the team game almost exclusively within their team environment and then doing the technical work on their own, you know, via these other influences. You've already lost. You're falling further and further behind the curve, if that's what's occurring. You want that situation inverted. You want to, in your team environment, have your player learning the team game with getting a little bit of sprinkle of the individual skill stuff, for sure. And then outside the team environment, learning the individual skill stuff on your own with a personal trainer, with your family and friends. And then you're set up to properly compete and move up the competitive levels that is the sport.
Can you talk a little bit about the specifics of, you know, what team training actually looks like, or what a parent should be looking for when they're trying to select a environment for their kid?
Yeah, it's difficult to without visuals, of course, because it's just an audio podcast. But I mean, hopefully the families have watched soccer for an appreciable amount of time. And if they're watching soccer on TV, you can kind of grasp what, you know, what's important in teams. So possession is important, being able to build out of the back, which that could be another episode, John, but basically your row of defenders with the goalkeeper are kind of knocking the ball and not just kicking it forward. And that requires training in the club environment. Your coach should be teaching these sorts of things. And then from that line, how do you advance the ball to your midfielders? And then how do you advance the ball ultimately into the attacking positions to score goals? And that's just on the attacking side. The defending is another matter. But that structure and how all the individuals relate to one another within that structure is what the players need to learn. And I think, you know, the natural question is, well, Gary, you know, at what age should that start being taught? And I think it's never too early to start teaching those things. I mean, okay, maybe if you're 5 years old, don't start teaching those things. that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But, you know, once you reach the age of 9 or 10, certainly 11, the players have more than enough capacity to be able to execute these ideas, absorb these ideas, comprehend the ideas. And that's what the coaches should be doing in their training, in their practices.
Does that extend beyond, you know, the 9, 10, 11-year-old age range? Like when should that focus on this team training stop, or should it ever stop?
No, it never stops. It never stops. I mean, it only intensifies more and more the older you get, because you really have to. Yeah, this is what I just finished describing. Hopefully I did a decent job, is what quote unquote tactics are all about. Tactics are about how are you going to play as a team, and individually, an individual player being able to understand how they fit into the team collective and what their decision making is supposed to be. When we talk about a style of play, which I think is a little bit more of an advanced topic, hence answering your question that this never ends. When we talk about a style of play, each individual on the team has a specific role. And what that means is that there is a set of correct and incorrect decisions for a particular position. And that player, via communication with the coach, or the coach needs to communicate to him properly, what is a correct decision in this style of play? What is an incorrect decision in this style of play, depending on the context or the situation that the player finds themselves in? So if you are the right back and we are on the attack and the ball is on the left side of the field, what should his or her position be like and why? And then when they are going to receive the ball, that player needs to understand, if they're in the offensive side of the field, what is a correct and incorrect decision. So this is style of play, but it's all rooted in tactics. That is what tactics are. And then it all goes back to the team collective training, which is crucial.
I hope that people take away from this that it's not, soccer's not random. And so when you start to watch a kid's game, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, whatever it is, and if you have a club or a team or a coach that's training mostly like technical stuff, when you get into the actual game, 7v7, 9v9, 11v11, you know, if they're only doing this technical stuff at training and they're not focusing enough time on the team aspects, well, then you're pretty much just watching random soccer. But what you just described requires, you know, a lot of training, a lot of details, and so everything is purposeful. Maybe that's the misconception about that old saying, you know, possession with a purpose. I don't really like that saying, but it does kind of ring true in a way.
Yeah. And when I say, I want to clarify something. When I say that each player on the team, each position has a specific role, meaning that there are correct and incorrect decisions for that role, I don't want it to be misunderstood that there isn't freedom or creativity associated with the position. Not at all. The creativity and freedom comes from the set of correct decisions that exists, if that makes sense. So if the right back is going to receive the ball in a particular scenario and circumstance, which is a huge space to consider, right? Every possession is unique. That player has, I don't know, half a dozen decisions that which may be quote unquote correct. And that player, depending on his vision and the context of the match, then has to choose within a set of six correct decisions. Does that make sense? So that is your freedom and your creativity. Now, a correct decision may be to dribble by your opponent. A correct decision may be, as they say here in the United States, do a give and go with your center mid, because the context, you know, kind of presents itself, or that situation presents itself. The correct decision could also be, hey, I don't like it, I'm going to reset it all the way back with my keeper. The correct decision can be, I don't know, gosh, my right winger is wide open. If I could just one touch this right up to there, that it's going to present a good attacking opportunity. There is a whole space of correct decisions, and the creativity comes from selecting within that space.
People coaches, fans, even to a certain extent, they believe that to be restrictive, and they believe that there should be no restrictions on the players. The players should just have just free reign. And I hope that people can start to appreciate the difference between those two and how you get to something like FC Barcelona style of play or a Manchester City style of play, which is very, I mean, remarkable. We have a conversation about that word as well, versus something that's just random like Philadelphia Union from, you know, years past. So I hope that people can start to watch a game and start to appreciate that.
Yeah, when you don't give every player and their position a particular role and this incorrect and incorrect decision making sets or solution spaces, then it does indeed become random. And that is what we coin as not having an identity, not having a style of play. It's just picking your 11 starters and, you know, being a cheerleader on the sideline, say, okay, guys, come on, full intensity, focus, rah, 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 go get them. And then it's not a collective unit that's on the field. That is a huge disadvantage to the team, especially if the other team does have an identity and does have a style of play. And furthermore, that is a huge disservice to player development, because you actually are not developing your player at all. And furthermore, you know, one of the things that we've noticed for a very long time, and it's widely known, when American players have gone on and tried to ply their trade in Europe, the number one complaint, the number one issue, obstacle they encounter is the tactical side of the game, because they've been playing random soccer here in the United States where they can do whatever the heck they want. Hasn't been tactical at all. And they go overseas, and then they're getting very specific, restrictive sets of correct and incorrect decision-making, and they don't know how to handle that. They're like, what the fuck is this? And they struggle trying to follow instructions and being able to execute that on the field, because it doesn't become a natural part of the way that you learn the game.
I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I think there's a misconception when people hear players, especially young players or new players that go to Europe, and the players themselves will frequently say the game is much faster, but it's not necessarily that the actual, like, the speed of play is faster. It's the speed of decisions that are faster and the speed of making a correct decision that is a lot faster. And I feel like that's where the American player is typically behind. And that gets lost in the physical sense of speed. But I think it's more so, my opinion, the decision-making. So these players in Europe that, you know, have been born and bred in these environments, it's ingrained in them to make these decisions very, very quickly. You know, the actual physical speed of the ball, you know, how fast the ball moves, I don't think that changes very much, but it's the decisions and those types of things, the tactical things that are happening at a much higher rate. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, correct. The only thing I would say is it is indeed the speed of play that's faster. But I think there's a misunderstanding here in the States as to what speed of play actually means. It has absolutely nothing to do with physical attributes of players. It has nothing to do with how fast they run or how quickly or how fast the ball necessarily moves when it's struck. It's all about decision-making, as you said, because things are played in one touch over there, and decisions are so lightning fast that by the time you go, if you're on the defensive side, by the time you go to try to press the ball's already gone. And then if you're in possession of the ball, by the time you receive the ball, you know, the defensive players, your opponents, have already read what's going to happen in the future, and they're already on your ass pressuring you because they made those decisions way quicker. Versus here, if you look at an MLS game, you have so much time and space. It's unbelievable on the ball, because on the defensive side, the defensive players aren't reading the game into the future and aren't maneuvering themselves into good positions quickly enough. So that delay of a second or 1.5 seconds or whatever affords people on the ball so much time. And then on the flip side, if you're in possession of the ball, you know, everybody's making decisions so slowly that, you know, the speed of play is vastly reduced. That's why you rarely ever see these lightning fast combinations all over the field in MLS. And then, of course, we can get into the technical execution, you know, having the technique to do such things, which has an impact. But the decision making is also, or I should say, is the primordial reason why speed of play in Europe is much, much greater than here in the States.
And it's funny, too, that you mentioned that we can get into the technical aspects, because if you're afforded an extra second or second and a half or 2 seconds on the ball, well, you can get away with having less technical players in those types of environments. So that's why we see players in those environments, MLS, the development academy, pretty much the stereotypical American soccer environment, I think. You get players that are more on the physical attributes side of the game instead of the technical attribute side of the game, and because they can get away with, you know, having a bad touch, they can get away with not having to be as precise with their passing and those types of things, and that's what that environment in Europe is unforgiving about. And that's why, you know, a player that maybe shines in Major League Soccer, Mix Discarude or something like that, goes to Europe and then falls off the face of the earth.
Yeah. And I think we're getting a little bit off track here, but I wanted to make one little comment also. And then each country in Europe, if you look at Germany versus Spain versus Holland versus France versus Portugal, they all have different levels to this, you know, as to what the technical requirements are, you know, the technique of the player and the tactical requirements are. And then that is one of the reasons why you may see more American players having success in Germany versus in Spain, because the player attributes, the requisite player attributes to have in those two countries are a bit different. In Spain, it's a little bit less about the physical attributes, and you know they bump up the requirement for technique and tactics. And in Germany, the technique and tactics isn't as high a level. And so Americans, aside from the passport reasons and those things, John, have a higher probability of success there, especially if they're not technical Americans or tactical Americans. But that's we're getting off track here, okay? We already talked about structured club training. We talked about the importance of playing on your own. We discussed the African continent to bring up the household, you know, aunt, uncle, playing on your own pickup game, and even the personal training. We kind of touched everything. So at this point, we can say, you know, it's basically those two things. It's structured club training and then what happens outside of structured club training. So it's really two components, but within that second component, which is outside the club infrastructure, you have the family influence, playing on your own, pickup games, and personal training. And it's very simple. You can mix and match, you know, where you get all your touches in within those four areas. And if one of those areas is very weak, well, hopefully the other areas pick up the slack. For instance, if you don't have a former professional player in your household as a parent, well, how do you make up the slack for that? Well, maybe you're always out in playing pickup games with players who have been at a high level or are competing at a very high level, and you by osmosis get that mentorship, you know, during your pickup game experience. Or maybe you're going to a personal trainer who was a former professional or who developed professionals and can be that mentor that you don't have in the household. So you see, you pick up the slack with the other components if you're missing one. If you can't go or you don't want to go to a personal trainer and you don't want to pay $20 or $100 an hour, no problem. You know, hopefully in the household, you have a father or an uncle or a bigger brother who can take you outside and be that personal trainer for you.
In years past, you've kind of highlighted that our structured club training environment or the infrastructure that we have in the United States is actually quite good. And, you know, we have the necessary components to excel in that area, even though we're not excelling that area. But where Americans in general are really lacking seems to be this playing on your own or playing outside of that team structured environment. So, you know, if there's one spot that we're lacking, it could be, you know, playing pickup games. It could be, you know, are you dribbling the ball on your own when you're outside a team practice? It could be, are you getting personal training? Are you acquiring that personal training outside of the structured team environment? And we as Americans seem to rely too heavily on, you know, those two club practices and one club game per week and thinking that that's sufficient, but it's really not.
Yeah. And I'll add to that and say, we rely too heavily, not just on the club training, but the personal training also, those two things. And those two things alone are not enough because you're missing the pickup game side of the equation. The pickup game side of the equation is where you basically fuck around with the ball, you know, and do whatever the hell you want, express your creativity as much as you want, experiment as much as you want. And in kind of like a semi-team environment, but it's also very individualistic. And, you know, if you're just stuck in a professionalized situation, organized situation, that is your club or a personal trainer for an hour, two or three, you are missing a hugely important ingredient, which is the pickup game side of the equation.
And pickup game and playing on your own, what's the difference between those two? Why are those two separated?
Yeah, because I think there is an important space to consider, which is let's say you're a 13-year-old. You as a 13-year-old going alone in your backyard or to the racquetball courts or to a wall, wherever you look, and spending time with yourself with the ball. I think it's almost a meditative practice, if I can say that, where it's you and your own mind, and it's you developing your own mental fortitude in a different sort of way, saying, hey, I'm going to improve X, Y, or Z in my game without anybody else around, because you can't have anybody else around to improve those things. If you want to improve your left foot, you know, what better way than to be by yourself against the wall doing 1,000 different touches or strikes every single day, or more than 1,000, and then grinding away, seeing every repetition as a success or failure as to how you wanted to stroke it. I think that's just crucially important, that you can't get in a pickup environment. You can't get that in a personal training sort of setup, because when you're with a personal trainer, it's not you and your mind alone. You know that your mentor, your personal trainer is right there. And by the way, he's guiding you and giving you structure. So it's a different dynamic, man. I don't know if that made sense.
It does make sense. And I think it brings up just some other things to talk about as well. It's that, of course, there's going to be times in a player's career where they are going to need that extra push from somebody like a strength coach or a personal trainer or those types of things. You know, they shouldn't be expected to do everything on their own. But the flip side of that is that they have to be able to do certain things on their own. And if they're not willing to go pick up a ball or to go for a run or to improve themselves on their own, or if they're missing that aspect of their own personal development, then that's going to make it significantly more difficult for them to actually make it, make it in air quotes again, because that could mean different things to different people. But if you're missing that aspect of it, it's going to be very, very difficult to make it.
And if you're playing on your own and you make this part of who you are, then it shapes you from a discipline standpoint, from a commitment standpoint, from a lifestyle standpoint. If you make it part of your lifestyle from an early age of going out on your own and getting your repetitions in and touches in and being with your own thoughts, if you make that part of your lifestyle, then as you go up the levels and an age and, you know, hopefully one day become a professional, that's an incredibly good lifestyle and discipline to have in order to secure your future. You always hear these stories of the great professionals as to how, you know, they're first to practice, last to leave, and they put in extra work outside the team environment by themselves, you know, extra shooting, extra whatever it is, even in gym work, if you want to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo. Well, that for you to reach those levels, it has to be part of who you are. It has to be your lifestyle. And that only comes from within. And I think that sort of thing comes from being able to play on your own and starting that practice early on.
What comes to mind is that you need to have your own personal identity, just like a team needs to have their own identity. But you need to have your own personal identity. You need to identify as a soccer player, maybe just something general like that, but, you know, a hard worker, a beast, like whatever you want to identify as, but that you need to have that self-identity.
Sure. And here, since we're in the States, someone most everybody can relate to, the stories anyways, is Kobe Bryant. I'm sure everybody has seen plenty of short video clips on Instagram or TikTok or other social media platforms of what this guy would do on his own time, right? And by himself, without anybody training him, without any teammates, without anybody else, he would spend countless hours by himself working on his game.
It's an interesting point too, because Kobe instilled that in his daughter as well, Gigi, who, yeah, everybody knows what happened with that. But, you know, there's countless clips of how she was being nurtured to be something special in basketball. And this is the examples that we've talked about before too, is like, you know, what if David Beckham was your dad? What if Kobe Bryant was your dad? These types of things. And, you know, if parents don't have that type of professional level experience to pass down to their kids, well, who can they learn that from? Again, Kobe is a great example. And there happens to be, thankfully, quite a bit of content out there about how him and his daughter, you know, nurtured their relationship and involved sport with it. I think that's pretty special.
Yeah. So I think we've covered it, John. Yeah. We've touched on all of these five components. If we want to repeat them, it's the structured club environment, the household influence, the playing on your own influence, which we just wrapped up on, the pickup game influence, and the personal training influence. Those five components, man, if you're getting a healthy dose of all those five and you're for years, you're in a great position to be successful.
Our flagship program helps coaches and trainers discern what is good for their teams and for their players. But now we've created a program for parents. Because parents, you are personal trainers too. Yep, that's right. And in order to properly mentor your player, you need to know what's good and what's not. Just like coaches, you and your player are flooded with thousands of training videos on YouTube and Instagram. But most of them are a waste of time because they aren't relevant. They don't translate to the real game. And figuring out what does and what doesn't, and why, is just flat out difficult, especially if you don't have a background in soccer to lean on. So, we've taken Brian Kleiben's more than 20 years of experience working with teams and individual players, from U9 to U19, and extracted valuable lessons that can help you navigate the minefield that is American youth soccer. But this isn't just about drills. That's only a small fraction of it. And to be honest, you can get drills anywhere. What you're getting with the 343 Masterclass are the cultural lessons and an education in philosophy that other trainers and courses don't offer. It's these elements that can help you understand the landscape, read the game on and off the field, and translate everything into real development for your player. Right now, you can get on the list for the 343 Masterclass. We are currently rolling it out little by little to small groups. To reserve your spot, go to 343masterclass.com. All right. Thank you for listening. Do you have a question about the topic that we covered in this episode? If so, we'd love to hear from you, and we will be answering some of your questions at the end of next week's episode. Submit your questions on Twitter or head to 343coaching.com to leave your question in the comment section. Make sure that you are subscribed to 343 FM on your favorite podcasting app. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and many more platforms. And if you're feeling super generous, we'd love it if you dropped us a 5-star rating or a review. And don't forget that you can find our entire library of podcast episodes, over 200 written articles, and our online courses that help accelerate the development of coaches and players using methods that have been proven to work here in the United States. Once again, all of that can be found at 343coaching.com. All right. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next time here on the 343 Podcast.